Cohen, and many of you are already aware of some of the older adult homeless issues. Cohen's been a pretty prolific author in that area. He first identified them as the invisible population or the invisible homeless. They tend to melt in with the other homeless on the streets and in our shelters. It's estimated that about 2.5 to 28% of the total homeless population are older. Part of that large range has to do with definitions, and the other part has to do with being hidden. Homelessness is estimated to be about 3.5 million people in the U.S., depending on what data you use. It can range anywhere from about 0.5 million to 3.5 million. And the definition we're using for homelessness, as we move on today, has to do with the Stuart McKinney Act definition of 1994, which is the person who lacks fixed, regular, and adequate nighttime residence. Part of that also has to do with one that is a temporary shelter, such as those that live in cars or in temporary housing. The definition of older homeless is not quite the same as what we define as older, the older population in general. It's been modified by not only Cohen, but also Crane and other authors. They're actually suggesting that older homeless should be identified from age 50 and up. At age 50, homeless persons have physical illnesses and disabilities resembling those of the general population who are up to 10 to 20 years older. And I'm sure you've already seen this in some of your public health practice where you look at someone, whether it's in drug court or in some of our other arenas, and we ask them how old they are, and we're looking at someone that we might be guessing is about 40, and we hear that they might be about 25. And you see that with many of the much of the homeless population as you work with them. Homeless persons aged 50 to 65 fall between the cracks because they're not old enough for Medicare, but their physical health is aggravated by poor nutrition and severe living conditions resemble that often of a 70-year-old person. And that data is from the National Coalition for Homeless. The risk factors identified for being older and homeless are both looked at an individual level and a structural level. For the individual level, those are those children that we work with that are already in foster care. They are runaways or throwaways, or they're living in shelters. They are people who their former lives or their present lives have had exposure to substance abuse or addictions. There may be some mental illness. There's also suggested by Crane that there's been some loss, whether it's in the form of discharge from the military service, death of a parent or spouse, or loss of job. And some say difficulty managing finances, which for those of you that work with older adults that are already settled into high rises can see how sometimes if they're not paying attention to bills and paying their rents, that they can lose the placements that they do have. So sometimes a combination of those events come together. In terms of structural factors for older homeless, it includes the thing that we're well aware of, the declining availability of affordable housing throughout the country, poverty, plus trying to balance housing with their food, medicine, and health care, and demographics and race. The consequences of being older and homeless include once you're on the street, if you picture as you've yourself experienced age gradually, that you notice sometimes it's a little harder to get out of a chair, a little harder maybe to get up in the morning, and you can just imagine that if you have no place to sleep at night that's comfortable, the amount of difficulty you have moving around during the cost of the day, the entire day. There's also a distrust of crowds at shelters. They're a little afraid of being taken advantage of, so they kind of move into themselves. The older homeless is also more prone to victimization. In Detroit, there was a study done that showed that half were robbed and a quarter had been assaulted while homeless. They're more prone to be ignored by law enforcement and more health problems including their chronic illnesses and functional disabilities. Part of them not getting picked up by law enforcement has to do with who gets picked up, and that's the one who speaks back or reacts to the criminal justice system. Health problems of the older homeless are exacerbated not only by their age, but by their living conditions, their poor nutrition, the sleeping arrangements, or lack of sleeping arrangements. compounded with their already difficulty in terms of peripheral vascular disease, plus their exposure on the street, dehydration, urinary incontinence, infectious diseases, musculoskeletal ailments, lower leg problems, and accidents and assaults. Chronic diseases include diabetes, heart disease, and mental health disorders. The health strategies for the homeless, strategies that will help us would be for older homeless, for those being at risk for being homeless, and for those that are already homeless. So the strategies I will suggest are not for those always already on the street, but those who are almost ready to be let go of wherever they are staying. The challenges for us will be creating a sense of privacy in this open environment when we're trying to work with them, their mistrust and conflicts with shelter and soup kitchen staff, the lack of social support, inefficient bureaucracy, ageism, sexism, racism, classism, and the downstream focus of our healthcare system. What I suggest, which is not just my idea, but also suggested by Crane in her work, as well as work done by the Committee to End Homelessness, Elder Homelessness, and by a group of Franciscan sisters in New York, is a three-tier approach to service delivery. The first tier being that downstream approach, the second tier being kind of in the middle between downstream approaches and upstream, and the third tier being something that actually is an upstream intervention or long-term strategies. The downstream approaches, which many of you have probably seen, are the multi-purpose centers or the drop-in centers. According to Crane and Warnes, in this group, homelessness could have been prevented if the older homeless had received outside assistance at a critical moment in their life. And sometimes this first-tier approach are the things that we see at drop-in centers, such as laundry, social services, clothing. But each of these drop-in centers, one problematic area for them is that they do become frightened when they're around the younger homeless. Other tier one approaches are shelter programs where they can stay from dinner time until dawn, and they don't get asked to leave, hopefully, until they had a chance to move in the morning. Some of the difficulties with it, you can see just in looking at this particular shelter in this photo, it being an older person, and when you work in a shelter, sometimes you'll notice that the homeless population that utilizes that shelter often have beds that they designate for themselves or their friends, and sometimes if a person's older, it's hard to get into those bottom bunks, that they might have to be the person that tries to negotiate the top. Health service programs include the health care for the homeless programs that are in existence across the country, preventative outreach, suggestions that we use, connectedness or unconditional positive regard for this population, and case management. Other first-tier approaches is getting people who are over 65 connected with their Social Security benefits, let them know they exist, help them with the paperwork, getting them through the system. Over 50% of the homeless are eligible for some type of Social Security program, and they're not already all connected to it. Only 10% actually receive benefits. Our need is to try to figure out how to link the older homeless with these social programs. Other first-tier approaches include emergency elder shelters, where they actually focus in on the older adults, but right now we only have 8 in the country. That was as of 2005. We have day programs for elders in some states and outreach programs that specifically target the older homeless. The second tier approach is trying to empower the homeless to try to connect with these services, trying to recognize what their strengths are and to help them get some kind of temporary housing that's beyond the one-night shelters. The third tier, which I would hope that we could work toward more and more over time, is the upstream approaches where we actually have some policy changes where people don't have to depend on coverage to get health care, that we do have some kind of a universal health care system and managed care, and more permanent supportive housing where the federal government has in the past awarded several states with some program monies in order to develop this type of program where a person who's lived on the streets for many years of their lives has an opportunity to live in housing where there are services available, including nursing services, social services, as well as case managers. Within this third tier approach, it's also recommended by Crane, by Cohen, by myself, that we begin to look at early signs of eviction for many of the older adults throughout the country. Notice whether or not retirement has just taken place for this family, this older adult, whether or not there's been a death of a parent, widowhood, and increased signs of mental illness or some kind of cognitive changes where we could step in and perhaps help them from being evicted. One group of people that uses this three-tier model altogether is a group of Franciscan sisters in New York that I had the opportunity to work with for a period of time. The sisters started after the deinstitutionalization in the 1960s. They noticed the number of older women on the streets of New York, and because of the issues of trust, not just with other homeless, but with all of us, they had to approach this population very delicately. So this group of sisters specifically targeted the so-called bag ladies in New York at the time. They started gently by passing out blankets and sandwiches at night, every night, and eventually established very low levels of trust, but a little bit of trust, and ultimately were able to pull them into some of the temporary shelters overnight for showers and food, and gradually built that up. This model was used by the Franciscans and the Franciscan Sisters for the Dwelling Place in New York, but actually described more fully by Crane's work. And they call it Pathways from Street to Resettlement. She's redone this in the UK, where you actually start off with trust and doing your outreach on the streets, get them into the drop-in centers or temporary placements, and then gradually, once you've worked with the population for a while, it's hopeful that you can move them into permanent supportive housing, but she doesn't believe you can make that leap directly. Other groups that have worked with the same kind of issue is the Committee to End Elder Homeless that now calls itself HEARTH, and it's to try to keep people in housing as they get older by working with finances, mental illness, health issues, and keeping them active. And this program was developed by Babcock in Massachusetts. The most relevant for public health would be the upstream interventions, which is, of course, to eradicate elder homelessness in general, to create permanent supportive housing and social justice issues, including adequate income, housing, and affordable health care.